Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 122 with Mark Willis on how to invest the same dollar twice. When Mark stumbled upon this investing strategy, he was trying to dig his way out of student debt. Like most, Mark was just making payments and then larger payments with the goal of paying off the debt faster. Makes sense, right? Then he figured out a way to invest that payment money in an asset first, then leverage that asset to pay off the debt in full while continuing to make the payments that he was originally making. And the big difference here is that at the end of the day, once the student debt was paid off, which he was going to pay off anyway over time, Mark now had an asset that actually increased in value over time, essentially keeping his money invested while paying off the debt. Quick word of warning, this is not a real estate investment per se, but can be used to fund real estate deals. Second word of warning here, this topic is a bit more advanced for those of us a little ways down the path of wealth creation. That said, if you're still on the front end of your wealth piling journey, I encourage you to continue listening. I remember I first heard about this strategy during a calendar year that I only made $20,000. I make a lot more than that now, and I'm actually in a position, thank God, to make the investment discussed here on this episode. It's funny how things have a way of getting better over time, seeking wisdom and applied action, right? Isn't that why you're listening right now? Anyway, let's get started. All right. Welcome to the show, Mark. How you doing today?
Doing great. Loving life. It's those 2 weeks out of the year in Chicago. Everyone actually likes living here weather-wise, so I'm loving it.
Yeah, we're in the middle of October. We're already having the elevator complaint sessions about the cold nights, but today's beautiful, sunny sky. And for the listeners, both of us are actually recording from Chicago today. So, Mark, for people who don't already know your name, maybe they're not already listening to your podcast, can you give us a background of, you know, your story, some of your real estate experience, and then what led up to your business today, maybe like a Reader's Digest of what your business today kind of consists of?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so my name is Mark Willis. I'm a certified financial planner and owner of Lake Growth Financial Services, a financial firm here in Chicago. We specialize and have kind of over the last 5, 6, 7 years really stumbled into the real estate space as a partner with the real estate investor, and have put on several different workshops, written several books on the topic of real estate investing and helping to build out the best tools for the tool belt of any real estate investor, whether they're buying and flipping or buy, hold, and rent, the PERS strategy, everything from top to bottom. We focus on the real estate investor and business owners to give them some big pools of liquid contingency cash that they can draw on for whatever their real estate needs might be. And my brief story, I'll keep it as brief as I can. Graduated from graduate school. My wife and I had six figures in student loan debt when we graduated, and no jobs in the midst of the Great Recession. And that was a big wake-up call that we needed a real financial plan to, you know, climb our way out of that pit. And it was in the midst of all that that we discovered how financial planning and a real financial plan with tools that we could use in our day-to-day lives could actually benefit us. We've since really fallen in love with the strategies we've come across, and the real estate investors that we work with every day are some of the best people I've gotten a chance to know over the years.
Nice. So how did you dig yourself out of that? Could you share the strategy and some of the particulars? I know there's people right now with that six-figure debt hanging over their head, and maybe they just got out of school or they've been making payments. I mean, what's the plan? What's the strategy for handling that?
Well, you know, we started with the idea that, hey, let's just crush that debt. Let's throw every last penny in our budget toward that. And we were doing pretty well. We had $120,000 in student loans. And all my training taught me that mutual funds, buying term and investing the rest, and then throwing all of our money at student loans was the right way to go. I'd been listening to radio hosts tell me that every day on the radio. And, you know, if Dave Ramsey says it, it must be true, right? So we were plowing the majority of our earned money towards student loans, eating beans and rice, and on Friday nights we'd have rice and beans. And we felt like the more we paid down our debt, the better off we'd be. But the trouble was, we got about halfway through that project, and we woke up basically to the idea of opportunity cost. And so, Dan, really the trouble was, we realized all of that money that we had been, you know, sending to Sallie Mae and her cronies was money we'd never be able to use or see or grow ever again. So what is the cost of giving a dollar away, whether it's for a cup of coffee or to pay off a debt? Well, it's not just that $1, is it? It's all the money that $1 might have grown to had we done something else, like invested that dollar instead. And it wasn't until a, you know, good mentor of mine slapped me upside the head and said, well, you know, what about letting your money do two things at once? And he brought up that truth about how mega banks were basically running the show, and that the super wealthy didn't get to where they were because they were getting the match in their 401ks. He mentioned that Americans basically were insane, throwing a third of their income toward debt. And that's according to the U.S. Commerce Bureau. 35.9% of our income is going toward debt. That's everything from the mortgages to the car loans to the credit cards. If a third of our money is going toward banks, and if time is money, that means a third of my day and more was going toward working for a bank. And that just really miffed me, I guess is the short answer. So, you know, he brought up the ideas that, you know, maybe there's a better way to pay off your debt. Maybe there's even something better than being debt free. And that was like cracking a little crack in the building that Dave Ramsey had been building in my mind. And he said, is it possible, Mark, that Dave Ramsey could be wrong about something? So, you know, I kept digging and digging into some strategies that helped us become better than debt-free, which is what we ended up building our business around, the idea of using a high-capitalized form of whole life insurance, of all things, to wipe out our debts and even have that money growing in our account at the exact same time. So it allowed basically us to pay off our student loans, but still have the ability to grow and earn dividends even on the money we had used to pay off the student loans.
All right, cool. I have a couple notes. I wanted to ask you a few questions, but right there toward the end, I feel like you lost me. I don't know if you glazed over something that was key and takes a lot of study to understand, but I use high cap life insurance to basically do two things at one time. How did that actually go toward paying down a debt? Can you get into the detail there for me a little bit?
This is one of my favorite things to help some clients do, whether it's student loans or buying off your mortgage. So imagine, maybe some of your listeners have heard of the snowball method, you know, paying the one loan off at a time, you know, one balance off at a time. We call this the snow bank method, right, where you build up capital in your own bank, your own banking type system. It's essentially a high cash value, dividend paying, whole life insurance policy, and that policy has a living benefit, not just a death benefit. So, you know, as a CFP, I'd never heard of this before. It's so strange that it's not exactly taught when you're getting your degrees and credentials and such. But the idea is, overfunding a life insurance policy gives you big pools of money that you can use for any purpose, whether it's paying off your student loans or buying your car or investing in real estate. So for my wife and I, we said, all right, instead of throwing, you know, the $2,500 a month in our student loan payments above what we had to do, let's reduce our student loan payments down to the minimum, which was about $800, let's say, which still felt like a lot to us at that point in life. And let's throw everything else we can into this overfunded whole life insurance policy that was designed specifically for banking. So it's really important that it's engineered from the start to build up correctly and be used for the banking purposes. So imagine two piles of money. We got the big pile of student loan debt, and that's coming down slowly as we make those monthly payments. And at the same time, we're also flooding our cash value policies with our money, letting that money grow as fast as we possibly can pack it in there, comfortably, of course. And so that pile of money is growing while our student loans are shrinking. And as we get enough in the policy, we simply take a loan from the cash value, which we can talk about that process if you'd like, and with one fell swoop, we just wipe out the student loan debt. So we bought back our debt. We are student loan debt free. And then crucially, and this is really important, if the policy is designed correctly, the money in the policy will continue to grow as if you had not taken a loan against the policy. So if I recall, we had about $70,000 in our cash value life insurance, and we borrowed that money out to wipe out the remainder of our student loan debt. If we had just paid that student loan debt off the old-fashioned way, we'd have had zero net worth, earning nothing, right? But by using the policy, building it up in there first, then taking a loan to wipe out the student loans, we still have a loan on our policy, but we're in control of how we repay that loan. And importantly, the policy is paying us dividends, even on the capital we borrowed.
That's wild. I imagine that these interest rates on the borrowed money would be based on the market rate, equal to or similar to the student loan debt, or what risk would there be that the interest rate will be, you know, why is the insurance company not taking 10% instead of, you know, the 4 or 5 on your student loan debt?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to analyze that for sure before you go jumping into one of these policies, because every insurance company does something different when you borrow against it. I'll give you a couple of examples. One kind of company, and there's many out there, there's probably 1,500 life insurance companies out there, a certain class of insurance companies will actually lower your dividends when you borrow against it. Let's just say there's a certain company from the Northwest, we won't name any names, that lowers the dividend anytime I access the money. Okay, that's not fun. How is that any better than a savings account? All right, when I take money out of my savings account, how much interest am I now earning on that money? Well, nothing. And most insurance policies work the same way. When I borrow out my cash value, it stops paying me dividends on that money. Contrast that to a mutually held life insurance company that offers non-direct recognition loans. So let me say those terms again in case folks are driving. It needs to be mutually owned, meaning it needs to be owned by the policyholders, not shareholders on Wall Street. So nobody else is making profits off this except the owners of the company. And then second, it needs to have in the contract itself, it needs to talk about how the loans are non-direct recognition. That's gobbledygook to most folks. It was to me, even as I was in finance for many years before I got into this particular expertise. Non-direct recognition means they simply don't recognize that you've taken the loan, and they pay you the full dividend as if you had not touched the money. That's key for when we're using this both for paying off our debts, but maybe you can already start to see how this relates to buying your real estate this way.
Are these dividends, I mean, can you give me an example of one recently? Are they based on how well that company's performed, or are they a fixed set dividend? I mean, you know, is there a risk that these things go down in value also?
Yeah, so I'll be general and then I'll get real specific. So these insurance companies are built to be profitable. And so, in fact, they have not missed a dividend ever in the last 100 years. Even during the Great Recession, even during the 1930s depression, they weren't just paying guaranteed growth every year. They were throwing dividends in to the policies on top of the guaranteed growth. So it's important to realize that these policies aren't going to outperform the stock market in the best years. You know, the stock market did great in 2017. My whole life policies probably did about 5.5%. So, you know, I've seen them even do less than that. I've seen policies do about 4. I've seen other policies do 7. It's somewhere in that range. So these are really not supposed to be the stallions of your investment portfolio. I don't even call whole life insurance an investment. It's really more of a cash allocation in your portfolio. They're certainly doing better than savings accounts, though. That's for sure. So the loan rate on these policies are really well below market rates. And because of how they charge interest, typically you get some tremendous arbitrage when you borrow against the policy. Just to be kind of specific here for a minute, Dan, if you had a policy loan of, let's say, $10,000, and let's say you borrowed that $10,000 from a life insurance company that's designed the way I've just been describing. And let's say you decided, because you're the banker and you get to decide these sorts of things when you own the bank, that you wanted to repay that policy loan at a rate that was comfortable for you. So it's important to realize these policies don't have any required repayment schedule. You get to set that, or just choose not to pay it off, and the loan is forgiven when you pass away. It's reduced by the death benefit when you pass away. So let's say you did decide to repay the loan, and let's say you were doing $250 a month or something on that $10,000 loan. The loan interest that's charged would be approximately an APR of about 1.9% over 4 years. And that would work out to, I just ran the math here, $764 of policy loan interest. Is that with me on all that so far? So $700 plus or minus of policy loan interest, and you borrowed out $10,000, paid it back over 4 years. Does that make sense so far?
It does. I guess the part I'm having trouble with is how does then the insurance company make money on my $10,000 if you follow where I'm going with it? Kind of affects the dividend if everybody did that?
Yeah. Well, so recall there's nobody that's making money off this except the policyholders, because we are the owners of that company. Now, they made $764 of policy loan interest. So that's the profits they take. They also would make money if I croak and never pay the loan off. They get to reduce their liability to my family. You know, instead of paying my family $300,000, they only have to pay my family $290,000. Right.
Gotcha.
So the death benefit is reduced by loans. So they actually self-collateralize the loan, which is the safest kind of investment the insurance company can make. In other words, when I request a loan, they're happy. The insurance company realizes that they're going to be off the hook net my loan anytime they access that money, or anytime I access my money as a loan, they get to reduce the death benefit until I pay that loan off. Now,
Is there a reason why I would want to borrow that $10,000 and pay myself or that policy 9% interest? Would there be some other benefit to doing that to myself, or would that be just bad business on my part?
Well, hey, think of it this way. If you owned a mortgage company, all right, and let's say, Dan, you also need to get a mortgage on your condo or your house, would you go to any other bank to get your mortgage, or would you get the mortgage at your own bank?
I'd obviously get it at my own bank.
Okay. I would too. Yeah. What about when you're making those monthly mortgage payments? Who is the one that benefits as you make those monthly payments to the mortgage company that you own?
I would benefit.
Awesome. Yeah. And if you decided to charge yourself extra because you're a captive customer, you know, to your own mortgage company, that extra profit, you know, if you charge yourself 9% interest and everybody else had a lower interest rate on their mortgage, that's just more profits for the company that you own. Now, it's not just a 6-1, half dozen the other here. If I decided, like a year or two ago, my wife and I went to Hawaii and used a bank on yourself type policy loan to do that. It's one of these life insurance policy loans. Just took a loan out and spent a month in Hawaii. And while we were there, like on the beach in Hawaii, our policies got dividends, even on the capital we had borrowed out. And we decided we were going to pay ourselves a little bit of extra interest, which is amounting to just, you know, profiting on our trip to Hawaii. You know, the applications for real estate might be obvious at this point, but the more you can use this to your advantage, you don't have to rely on mortgage companies, HELOCs, hard money lenders. The list goes on.
Yeah, and a big chunk of this for everyone listening who knows it's obvious, is you got to put the cash there first. We got to figure out,
that's
you
right.
know, the house flipping side, the business profitability side, the generate our cash machine side first, and then we have these options at our disposal. So let's do an example, Mark, where I have $100,000 in cash. I'm selling a property that I own outright. $100,000 is coming back just to keep it even. I have a plan to use that $100,000 now before we talk it, to get in and out of deals. So I'm buying deals for 50, 60 grand. I'm flipping them for 40, 50,000 or putting 40, 50,000 in construction in, and I want to sell them for 120, 130. I'm going to do that on my own account. Anyway, so what's the right thing I should do with that 100,000 when I get that in, and how does that work?
Yeah. Well, so you brought up some really important things I'll just touch on quickly. You're right. You can't start one of these policies if you're in debt up to your eyeballs and can't service the debt you already have, or if you can't rub a couple of pennies together and save. It just isn't a good fit for everybody. And that's partly why, as a CFP, I've got to hear from you on an individual basis. What's your goals? What are your transitions coming up? What kind of debt do you have? Income? You know, what are the sizes of the properties you currently have in your portfolio? What's your cash flow like? You know, so we'd sit down and kind of have a financial consultation before any of this gets recommended. I think it's an awesome strategy, but I can't recommend it to just everybody because it's not a good fit for everybody. You know, I think everyone should know it's out there, that this exists. I don't think enough people even realize this is an option, but we don't make recommendations, you know, over a podcast for sure. But to answer your question, yeah, if you've got 100 grand and you're wanting to put that money to work in real estate, what's the best way to do your deals? Is that your question?
Yeah, that's a real life example. You know what my goals are. So what would be the recommendation?
Yeah, and in your circumstance, right? I don't know everything about your current situation there, Dan, but in general, the idea would work this way. If you had 100 grand and if you decided, hey, you know what? I want to put this into one of these policies. It sounds like it would give me some ability to use leverage to my advantage, to use OPM. Dump the money into a policy. The next week, you're able to access that cash to borrow against it and then purchase the real estate. So you dump that money in, depending on the size of the property you're wanting to buy, the policy would be available for you within a week or two to pull the money out. I'll give you another related example. A client of mine had a property in the downtown Chicago Loop area, and she sold the property for about 150 grand in profit. And within 2 weeks, she paid cash for another condo. She had put that 150 into a policy, borrowed it all out, everything that she could. It was about 135,000 that she could borrow out again. And she used that 135 to go pay cash for the next condo. Now the policy was still earning dividends and guaranteed cash accumulation on the full cash value as if she had not borrowed it out. And what's cool is the condo was appreciating in the marketplace. The policy was growing on a guaranteed basis at the same time. And her renter in that condo was paying her a rent check every month that she was using to pay off the policy loan. So that's probably what I would do. In the flipper's situation, if you're flipping a property, think about it this way. You pump the money into the policy, pull it out when you're ready to buy that property. Don't repay the loan at all on the policy. Let's say a year or 2 years go by before you're able to flip. You know, what bank would be willing to wait 2 years for a loan repayment? But with the policy, you can do that. You can wait until the property sells and then just pay off the loan, and you got yourself whatever profits the flip afforded you. And you have growth on the 50 or 60 grand while you waited.
So let's do this then. I put 100,000 in. Is it like 85% of that's available to be pulled back out a few weeks later? Is that realistic, or is there a certain threshold?
You know, it comes down to how the policy was engineered. I've seen it as low as 65% and as high as 85% right away. Mm-hmm.
So I buy this policy. I'm putting $100,000 cash in there. What kind of death benefit? Why else would I want that money sitting there? Can you give me an example of how that grows, what death benefits there, you know, the other things that go along with the whole life policy?
Sure. Yeah. Now, again, when I was getting into this myself, my wife and I, the life insurance portion was the furthest thing from our minds. We were mid-20s at that point, had no interest, had no need for the life insurance, really. We didn't think we did anyway. It was almost like an added bonus. And I was like, why are we looking at life insurance for a place to pay off our student loans? That just seems so weird to me. It was, you know, it was almost as foreign as, you know, trying to pay off my student loans with my auto insurance policy. It just didn't make sense, right? And I was a guy that was working with for a CPA at the time, was doing tax preparations and stocks, bonds, mutual funds. And it just didn't make sense that we'd be looking at this. But nevertheless, life insurance is the only place that let our money still continue to grow on a guaranteed basis and still have access to it. So to answer your question, in addition to having that living kind of benefit, you get a death benefit. And I don't know, it kind of comes down to how old are you, what's your health. But, you know, it's always more than your contribution. So if you dump in 100 grand, depending on how the policy was engineered, you might have, and what your age was, you might have 300 to 600 grand as a death benefit on day one, which grows each year.
Is that growth that you're talking about, is that the dividends you referenced earlier, or are there literally like dividend checks coming in the mail after a certain period of time?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, you have that option. You can either get a check in the mail as a dividend payment, you know, which represents the profitability of the company that you, in essence, own, that mutual life insurance company. Or you can reinvest those dividends, so to speak, putting them back into the policy as paid-up additions, which allows the death benefit to grow. And the cash value, of course, too.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it does make sense. You gave us a couple examples. I first heard about this, Mark, this strategy. I can't remember the guy's name. It was years ago, and I read a book with the same strategy laid out, and I was disheartened because at the time I was making, some pittance amount of money, and I thought like, well, this is way off, and you know, here I am 5, 6, 7 years later and I'm in a completely different situation, and this starts to make more sense. Are there any questions regarding the topics we talked about right now that I didn't ask the question but you feel like should be answered for the audience members to kind of know what's going on here?
Well, you know, I guess the key thing to think about is one, you know, you finance everything you buy. Either you're paying a bank interest and you're on their time schedule to repay them. And if you don't repay them on time, you're going to crush your credit. They're going to repo the property or whatever you've got on collateral. They're going to, you know, make your life not exactly a picnic going through that process, right? And plus they get the profits and they are as wealthy as they are and enjoy the largest real estate in every city because of their business model. They are literally the most profitable business in all of mankind, for all of human history. Or we're going to pay cash for our big purchases, our real estate, and that loses the opportunity to grow that money for evermore. We can't ever get that dollar back. Whether it's a cup of coffee or a condo, that dollar is now always and forever locked into that asset or liability. And so I guess the key thing is you finance everything you buy. Either you pay interest to a bank or you pass up interest you could have paid on that money had you left it invested instead. I believe that this particular strategy lets you bypass that problem of opportunity cost. And it isn't a cure-all. There's no magic in this. And there's costs to be considered. But it's a great place to park your money in between your deals and then use that money in two places at once when you do find the right property to invest in.
Pretty powerful. Early on in our episode here, you mentioned something I want to circle back to, and that is the advice that you were following was buying term and investing the rest. Can you shed light on that? And is that still a philosophy that you're following now, or was that something that was kind of a previous belief that you're shying against and warning against your clients to do exactly that?
Well, so, you know, the typical advice that we hear, that I heard growing up, was actually not so typical even just 40 years ago. It came from a guy named A.L. Williams, who was selling mutual funds and term insurance. So, you know, you can guess that if you ask a barber if you need a haircut, you can bet what his answer is going to be, right? So the honest truth is, and this is according to Dalbar, the third-party research firm Dalbar, over the last 30 years, real returns from investors in equity mutual funds. Do you want to take a guess, Dan? What do you think? What is the real return of investors in the stock market, 100% up into stock market, stock equity funds? What's their real return before fees and taxes?
Before fees and before taxes, I'm going to guess it's probably like 3%, 4%, although they advertise it as probably 8% if I had to guess.
Yeah, well, they say the average return of the stock market, the S&P, is 10% every year on the average, or some crazy number like that. But you're spot on, man. You win the prize. Yeah, it's like 3.66% over 30 years. And that includes two giant bull markets, including the one we're currently in as we record this. So, yeah, do I really want to buy term and invest for my whopping 3.6%? I don't think so. What I love about the real estate investor is he or she knows that they get to control their destiny a bit more with the real estate asset class. And so I guess that's where I'd probably lean toward now is how do we use contracts of insurance to couple it with real estate investing? I guess instead of buying term and investing, I'd rather buy a giant whole life policy, put as much of my money as I want to in there, and then use that as collateral for everything in my life, whether it's real estate or paying for my kids' college or buying my cars this way. Just buying my cars this way would save, you know, literally the average American hundreds of thousands of dollars over their lifetime. So, yeah, I don't think buying term and investing the rest even holds a candle to this strategy, if I might be so bold.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you have a limit or a recommendation? I know it's like I'm asking for these recommendations without much background. So somebody with a $3 million net worth, is it reasonable to expect 10% of that net worth to be implemented, invested, and used? Is it 20, 30, 50%? What would be like a reasonable expectation for someone with a $3 million net worth for this type of product?
For this product, well, it comes down to what their aims are. Are they wanting to retire on that? Are they ready to retire next Tuesday or 25 years from now? What's their liquidity like? Most people have $3 million, but it's tied up in a 401k that they can't touch, and a third of it will go to the Internal Revenue Service. So, you know, when we look at $3 million, it really comes down to what's their transitions coming up in life? What do they want to do with that money? And more importantly, what do they want that money to do for them? For the clients that seem to fit this strategy the best, whether they've got $1 million or $3 million or $10 million, it comes down to, hey, Mark, I want a big pool of contingency capital that I can deploy for deals. When I find a property, I want to be able to access that life insurance cash value within about 3 to 5 days is the typical when you can get that money out. They want tax-free income in retirement, which these policies are set up in the tax law, much like Roth IRAs, but without any, you know, income restrictions that Roth IRAs have, or phase-out rules or any of that. So those are the types of people that fit this strategy the best. Folks that want some control over their asset, can save considerably, and want to find, you know, deals in their neighborhood that they can pull the trigger on when they see something they like.
All right, Mark. Well, this is a pretty powerful strategy. My mind's going in a couple different directions. It's a little bit of a unique topic for us, our audience here at the REI Diamond Show, but I really appreciate the depth of and your forthcomingness in the examples with me here. Do you happen to have any book recommendations, one or two, that might have something to do with this? Or maybe you just feel like your clients, or maybe your number one recommended book to people in general that you could share with us today?
On this particular strategy or just overall?
How about one of these?
Investing,
how about on on the strategy, if you happen to have it, or in financials, mm-hmm. and et cetera, if it was something life-changing for you, maybe one recommendation for that. And then one other one that pops to mind for business, real estate, or you know, just a life-changing book in general.
Cool. Yeah, well, the book I'd probably recommend folks check out first is a book on this topic anyway, probably the best starter that gets your feet wet and kind of understanding this concept would be The Bank on Yourself Revolution by Pamela Yellen. She wrote it just a few years ago, and I think it's still the best book out there on the topic, New York Times bestseller. Another one might be The Banker's Code by George Antone, gets into some of this with how it relates to real estate. I just finished a book, co-authored a book with How This Works for Business Owners, Amazon e-commerce type business owners. It's called How to Be an Amazon Legend and Fire Your Banker. In fact, for your listeners, if they want to check in with me, I'd be happy to send that book to them at no cost. We're trying to get them out of our office here, and happy to do that.
Cool. Hey, Mark, if you could go back and share the crown jewel of wisdom with yourself, let's say, you know, 22, 23, 24, however old you were when you walked off the stage with the diploma and that big pile of student debt, what would be the crown jewel of wisdom you would go back and share with yourself then?
Yeah. You know, I think the best thing I can say is don't do what banks tell you to do with your money. Watch what they're doing with theirs and go do that.
That's good. All right, cool. We have gotten to the part where if people are listening and they want to get in touch with you, maybe you want to share some information and how they can go about getting a copy of your book if they want to reach out.
Okay, thank you. And thanks again for the opportunity, Dan. Yeah, our podcast is Not Your Average Financial Podcast. You can go to notyouraveragefinancialpodcast.com and you can subscribe right there. Anywhere you listen, we're there. You can also, if you'd like to learn more about this strategy, there's a button that says request a meeting, and you can schedule a 15-minute phone call with me or one of my associates, and we can answer some of your questions. And if you fill that out, just mention the REI Diamonds in your notes, and I'll be sure to send that copy of the book to you when you request a meeting.
Nice. Hey, Mark, I really appreciate it. Interesting topic, ton of information. I thank you for closing the door, blocking out the distractions, and giving us this time here today.
It's my pleasure. You're doing a great thing, and love your episodes. Want to see where you take this from here. So keep up the good work.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Keep an eye out for the next episode. Fellow Chicagoan Steve Werner joins us here to discuss, where are all the $50,000 fix and flip deals? The market has changed, and flipping houses for $50,000 profits has gotten challenging to find, but they do exist now with a bit more risk than before. With the markets all at all-time highs around the country, we all know things can change at any minute. Steve and I discuss in detail several ways to modify the fix and flip strategy to mitigate some of those risks, including a swift change in the pricing of the real estate market. So keep an eye out for that one. Now, are you interested in a pre-release of the next episode? That is, before the email goes out. When you subscribe on YouTube or one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, amongst others, you'll receive an advance notification as soon as the episode is published. If you'd like to check out my book, Become a Wholesale Real Estate Master, on the step-by-step about my journey into flipping houses, and also sign up to receive an email notification of the next REI Diamonds episode that gets released, you can go to reidiamonds.com and enter your email address in the form at the center of the page. I am always buying houses, so I am always looking for deals in Chicago, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Miami, and Tampa. So if you have a deal, preferably one I can fix and flip, please send it over. Contact me directly at reidiamonds.com. Also from that site, you can check out profitable available real estate deals and the entire archive of the REI Diamond Show, totaling more than 122 content-rich, money-making, idea-packed episodes. Finally, if you are not earning at least 10% on your investment capital and would like to do so, I suggest signing up at www.superchargedreturns.com. you'll receive an email notification of my next upcoming short-term private mortgage investment opportunity. They pay at least 10% interest and typically have lockup periods of just 3 to 6 months. Well, this concludes this episode. Thanks again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I will catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.